waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your way. So get outside and find it in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Ah, that would be me. And it's so great to be back. To be back again. You know, Diane and I drove into our lake house there at Branch Lake this afternoon from the Florida Keys. We drove all the way up from the Florida Keys, and we were so pleased to find a 6-foot ice berm in front of our driveway, which we had to chop our way through. It was a comfortable 25 degrees, and the ice was still in the lake, and Diane was so pleased. And we were just so happy to be back. But the good news is there were no black flies.
Yeah,
we didn't have a single black fly.
So they'll be around eventually.
Probably happen, yeah. Hey, it's nice to have you with us tonight, and it's really great to be back with you folks after 3 or 4 months down there fighting the heat and everything down there in the Florida Keys. It's great to be back, and I'm excited to be back on the show again. And I'd like to introduce our studio guests in a moment, but first the crew who make it possible every week. Our engineer, a man who is probably one of the, other than Bob Lehman, probably one of the most skilled and respected fly fishermen in the state of Maine. Our engineer.
Oh, we just lost him.
Norm Plord. Take a bow, Norm.
Good evening, Paul. Too bad you didn't bring the heat with you.
I know. I wish I had.
Yeah.
I wish I had. And our esteemed co-host, who's a registered master Maine guide. He's an author of a lot of great fishing books. We call him Mr. Trout, my friend Bob Lehman.
Well, so glad to have you back, Paul. That crisp voice of yours out over the airways again, just great.
Oh, I never met a mic I didn't love.
And it's too bad you couldn't have brought some of that weather you're talking about.
I know.
With you.
It was
it's
so
been desperate. It's been a cold winter here.
Yeah, you guys have
and
had
it,
a brutal winter.
And it won't
winter.
Quit. It just won't quit.
I know.
The ice is still in almost everywhere. It's just terrible.
But I think the ice will be out of Branch by the next couple of days.
You think so? It's got breaking up a little bit.
Got that gray look.
There's a big hole out in the middle, I know.
Oh, there is, yeah. It won't be long. We'll be trolling for salmon.
You know it.
Yeah. Hey, I want to introduce our guests tonight. First, a couple of young fellows from Hamden Academy who are going to start a Hamden Bass Fishing Club. And we're going to talk to these gents about that. And Evan Thomas and Seth Shawley, welcome to Maine Outdoors.
Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Nice to have you here. We'll be talking about bass in just a minute. And also, Mark McCullough, who's been on our show numbers of times. He's a wildlife biologist for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He writes a great column for the Northwood Sporting Journal. And he's a highly respected artist. And we really appreciate his art and his writing, and it's sure nice to have you here, Mark.
It's really nice to be back, Paul and Bob.
Nice to have you
here.
Thank you. All right, we'll be talking to Mark tonight. By the way, you know, this has always been a family show, and it always will be as long as I'm here. But we're going to push the envelope on that a little bit tonight, and we're going to talk about the sex life of the wild turkey. And so stay tuned for that. Yeah. And if you've, it's going to be a good show. I think you'll enjoy it. We've got Mark.
Well,
has
we'll have to put these young boys out in the hall. Just
if we may have to. Yeah. Mark has written an interesting column, which will be in next month's issue of the Sporting Journal. We're going to give a little preview on that column, and we're going to talk a little bit about the behavior of the turkeys. And if you're a turkey hunter, I think you'll find it interesting. And even if you're not a turkey hunter, if you're interested in wild creatures and why they do things, I think you'll be interested in hearing about that. And we'll be talking to Mark, too, in just a minute. Right now, though, I want to remind you that you're listening to this program, Maine Outdoors, longest-running outdoor show in Maine, by the way, on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3, 103.9 Bangor, and 1450 AM. I think that's in Rockland, right, Norm?
It is.
I think so.
I get that right. Okay. And we're pleased, again, to have you with us, because without you, we wouldn't have a show. And again, we encourage you to call in and participate. It's a call-in program, and the number to call if you'd like to join us anytime tonight is
1-800-966-1039.
And that's toll-free, right?
Yes, toll-free. And if you're local, you have to dial a whole number, 1-800-966-1039.
Okay, jot that down so you won't forget, because you may have a question for one of our guests tonight. Right now, though, it's time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal and Maine Outdoor Publications. Just wanted to tell you something. We don't hide anything from anybody. We're very transparent here. For many, many years, we've been giving away a subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal week after week after week for, 15 years now. And we're proud to do that, but it's becoming quite expensive for us, to be honest about it. And so we're going to cut back to one subscription per month. And during the rest of the month, we'll also be giving some other things away during the trivia questions. You might get a book from yours truly. You might get one from Bob Lehman.
Yes, absolutely. And, giving a couple away already.
There you go. And we may think up some other ideas for gifts. But anyway, we'll get one shot a month at a subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal. And no fair calling in and calling me a cheap guy. All right? Okay. But tonight we're going to give you a subscription to the Northwood Journal worth about $30 right after we go through the Outdoor Digest. Moose Lottery reminder, if you want to submit an entry to take a chance on getting a moose hunting permit, you have until May 15th, until midnight. And now you can only do this online. They don't send out hard applications anymore, right, Norm?
As far as I know, it's all online now.
Yeah, it's all online. But I did it. I recently applied for a permit, and it's pretty easy to do. Even I could figure it out on the computer, so you should be able to. And you have until May 15th to apply for your moose permit for this year. And I think they're putting out like a couple of thousand, I think. Do you know, Mark?
Think I heard a little over 2,000.
Yeah. I think a little more than last year, I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, May 15th. Don't forget that, because time is passing fast. We wanted to congratulate Lance Wheaton from down East Maine. Lance Wheaton has been named the Legendary Maine Guide for 2018. Lance has been on our show a number of times, and he's been very active in the outdoor community. He's participated in a number of boards and committees. He's also been, I think, on the Fish and Wildlife Advisory Committee. And he's from down in Forest City, down there in down East Maine. And he is following in Wiggy Robinson's famous footsteps. And God bless Wiggy. He's seems like, I'm not sure how long he's not been with us, but he used to be on our program right where you're sitting.
Oh, yeah. He's what a guy.
And he deserved to have a Legendary Maine Guide Award named in his behalf. And so we congratulate Lance Wheaton, and we'll be having Lance on our program here sometime in May. He has a new book.
Oh, look forward to that.
Look forward to having him with us. And again,
is there something about turkey hunting?
Or? Grouse hunting.
No, grouse hunting.
He's a fanatic grouse hunter.
Yeah.
So we'll get him on the show. And again, congratulations to Lance Wheaton for his honor. Let's see. Also, Aaron Merrill, who writes a column for the Journal at the New England Outdoor Writers Conference down in Massachusetts yesterday.
Yep.
Aaron was selected for the Cronin. They call it the Cronin or Dick Cronin Award.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite an honor to be selected. She's been very active, as she's really young. She's only been hunting and fishing about 10 years.
That's so, yeah.
But she and another gal started a Women in the Outdoors program.
Great.
So congratulations to Aaron Merrill for being named for the Cronin Award for the New England Outdoor Writers. Right now, I think we have time for a fishing report. Do we still play that Bob's favorite music, or is that gone by the wayside?
I can definitely play it.
I'm the big boss bass.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yeah.
These are my reeds.
Okay, Bobby's favorite intro music. Do you have a fishing report, Mr. Lehman?
I certainly do. And fishing has been stinko, as you probably guessed.
I would guess so,
Seeing all that ice out there, Paul.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
And it was usually this time of year, the ice line is up to Route 9 anyway, but not this year. And there's a few ponds down, you know, along the coast that are open.
Yeah, Tunk Lake is wide open. Tunk Lake.
Tunk Lake is open. I hadn't heard that.
Talked to Greg Burr yesterday.
That's about as far north as it comes, I think.
Yep.
And a lot of little ponds open in here and there, you know, scattered a few. And the rivers, brooks, and streams are all running beautiful, but very high and quite riley.
I would think so.
So the fishing, the brook fishing, has been awfully slow, And, of course, we got the canoe boys going in all these places now. All these races have been busy with that way. So
now, do you plan to race your Radisson in that race?
I don't think so.
No?
Just when you're in it, that's all.
Mark, do you ever participate in that canoe race?
I don't, no.
You don't?
Yeah.
Not my thing either. I tipped over on the South Absquook about this time of year with Diane. We tried to do a little whitewater thing, and it lasted about 30 seconds. And, man, that water's cold
this time of year. Oh, this time of year?
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Brutal.
I know it.
Gotta have a dry suit.
Yeah, that's what you need, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So that about wraps it up, Paul, till next week. Next week's going to look a lot better, hopefully.
It's bound to.
Right now, you stay home, tie flies.
I think you're right.
Get ready.
It's bound to be better. Can't get any worse. Okay. Mm. All right. Thank you, Bob. We appreciate that.
Yep.
And Norm, do you have any reports?
None whatsoever. Haven't been out.
Okay. Seth? Evan?
No, it's just really cold lately, so.
You guys haven't been fishing yet?
Oh, we've gone a couple of times so far, but there's ice on most of the ponds around here, so just waiting another week or two.
Yeah. How about you, Mark?
Haven't been out.
I haven't either. Okay, but we will. Better things ahead, that's for sure, in the state of Maine. And that wraps up Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. We have going to have an outdoor trivia question right now, and Mark McCullough has that question.
Are we ready? Okay, tonight's
stand by.
Trivia question is, what is the proper name for the white protrusion atop a male turkey's beak?
All right. 1-800-966-1039. If you know the answer, give us a jingle.
She's looking at something different.
Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and Mark McCullough is looking for an answer to his question. He wants you to tell him what you call that fleshy appendage that hangs atop a male turkey's beak.
We've got Eric on line one.
We have Eric. Good evening, Eric. Welcome to Maine Outdoors.
Good evening.
How are you?
Very good.
You think you know the answer?
I'll take a stab at it.
All righty. Where are you calling us from, Eric?
Parsonsfield.
I know. I should know where that is. Living in Maine for 77 years.
Down in York County.
York County.
They're picking us up down there, Paul.
Oh, wow. They're picking us up down there. That's good.
That's almost in New Hampshire.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay, Eric, what do you think the answer is, sir?
Is it a snood?
Oh, yes. You've got it right, Eric. Congratulations.
Right. Now, say that again. I love the sound of that. Say it again, Eric.
Snood.
Snood. And how do you spell that, Eric?
It's the hell out of me.
He's honest.
Well, it's spelled S-N-O-O-D. And later on in the program, Mark McCullough is going to explain the purpose of that snood. All right? You've won a year subscription to my favorite publication, the Northwood Sporting Journal. Congratulations, Eric.
Thank you very much.
You've been fishing, Eric?
I have, but I've been fishing in Alabama.
You're cheating. You're cheating.
That's not cheating. How was the fishing in Alabama?
Pretty good. A relation of mine took me out on his boat, and we enjoyed some bass that were moved up right in the shallows bedding.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I was down in Florida. I did a little fishing down there, too. We caught some blackfin tuna offshore, and it was a lot of fun. We took them home and filleted them up, and they were great. Great. You ever had blackfin tuna?
I have not, but it's on my to-do list to go
sometime. They're a lot of fun. They really are. A lot of fun.
Did you go to the Eldridge Brothers day they had down there just to skip from York?
I have not.
The fly shop they had, they had a big day down there. It was wonderful.
I have bought a fly rod there, though.
Oh, there you go. Good for you.
Right. Okay, well, appreciate your playing the game and listening to the program, Eric, and spread the word down there in Parsonsfield. Tell the folks about a great show we have on Sunday night, would you?
I will, but I can't get the radio station on my indoor radio or on the computer, but I sit out in the truck with my dog and listen to your show every Sunday night.
Oh, what could be better than sitting out in your pickup truck with your dog listening to Maine Outdoors? I think that's a great way to spend a Sunday night.
A lot of people do, believe it or not.
Okay, if you stay on the line, Engineer Norm is going to get your mailing address, and I'll get you signed up for a subscription right off, Eric, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you, sir. Have a good spring. All right, that was the correct answer. It's a snood, right?
Correct. All right. Yes.
And we'll be talking about that here in just a moment. Let's see. I think we're going to talk about it right now, aren't we?
Go for it.
Yeah. You know, it's been 4 months since I've been in the seat, you know, Mark. Anyways, great to have you with us. Great to have you with us. And we'll be talking to Seth and Evan a little later on, right after the 7:30 break. All right. I was motivated to invite you in here, not only because you're a great guy and always a good guest, but you wrote a really entertaining and informative column for the Northwood Sporting Journal, which I looked at and edited. Of course, with you, I don't have to edit anything. This guy is so precise. I mean, he just... I just run him. He's so good. Oh, anyway,
you pay him a big, you know, big wage.
Oh, big money.
Double.
Big money. Yeah. In fact, he's probably going to be able to go to the Bahamas next year on what I pay.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, the name of the column that Mark McCullough wrote is called "The Snoods, the Thing." Tell us, Mark, what the heck is a snood?
Well, Eric already knows, but for the rest of your listeners, the snood is that fleshy appendix that sort of comes off the top of a beak of a turkey and dangles down there, especially when the turkey's doing his strutting in the spring. So he has the ability to make his snood longer or shorter, but when he's trying to impress a female, he lets it dangle.
Well, I'll be darned. And I always thought it was the big feathers that they, what do you call that when they strut? What do you call it? They fan up.
Oh, a fan, yeah.
The big feathers, fan. But they've done some research on this, right?
Yeah, so I've always wondered. I'm a turkey hunter, and some mornings I just choose not to shoot and just watch what
just
goes
watch,
on.
Yeah. I've done that.
And it's just fascinating to think about. And I wondered before I wrote this column, well, what's really going on here? So I started to read some of the scientific papers about the breeding systems of turkeys. And it turns out there's a guy down in Mississippi, and his name is Richard Buchholz. And he's done some fascinating research to try to figure out who's selecting who. Is it the male that selects the female or vice versa? It turns out the female's in charge, and I think we all know that.
We knew that anyway.
Yeah, we knew that anyway.
The boys will find out later.
Right, yeah.
And, so I've done that too. I've chosen not to shoot just because it's so fascinating to watch the ritual. One thing that I've noticed in numbers of times I've watched the male strut around and the hens like just ignoring them, and they act like they're frustrated. They're trying, and I figure these guys trying to look as handsome as they can, and most of, not always, but a lot of times the hens just don't seem interested. And have you found that to be the case?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And you wonder why that is, and it turns out that there's typically only one dominant male turkey in any area that does the breeding, and he turns out that what the hens are looking for is the tom with the longest snood.
I'll be doggone.
It's not their flashy feathers. It's not their the big spurs they have on
their beard. The long beard.
That beard. No, they don't look at that at all.
I thought that would probably be a turn on for the hens.
Yeah, but the hens are eyeing up the tom that has the longest snood, and the tom that has the longest snood is the one who does all the breeding, and he suppresses all of the other males. So have you ever wondered when you're turkey hunting and there might be two or three or four toms around, and there always seems to be one that is the one that saddles up next to the hen, and the others are all just around the periphery watching.
Hanging around jealous. Yeah. They're looking jealous.
Very jealous. So So this researcher in Mississippi studied this, and he had captive turkeys, wild turkeys, and he allowed the hens to come in and see which males that they would select. And every single time, trial after trial after trial, they would select the male with the longest snood.
I'll be doggone. How come you guys aren't laughing? You young fellas. What do you think about this?
I'm not sure what to think, really.
I think they don't want to be wildlife biologists.
That's really interesting.
You do go turkey hunting, though, don't you, Evan?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Have you got a turkey yet?
No, because the season won't open for a while.
No, but I mean, before this year.
Yeah. Yeah, last year I got one. Couldn't call in the Tom at all, but just set up some decoys and he came right in. So
great.
Yeah. Is this new news for you, Evan?
Yeah, I always thought that, like Bob was saying, it's the fan or the beard or something like that. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, isn't this program educational?
It is. Very educational.
So let me ask you this. So you're saying then that if you have a dominant male turkey and you have five or six hens, and it's the season, it's the mating season, and I've seen the jakes kind of hang around the periphery, as you said. Do these jakes ever get a chance to mate with a hen, or are they just out of luck?
They're pretty much out of luck. It's the female that has to...
She decides,
She
right?
decides, and she has a certain behavior that she goes through that says that she's receptive to a male, and she just won't do that with a jake. I think maybe there's extraordinary circumstances. If all the other toms are gone in an area, maybe she would. But in most cases, no, she won't. She won't mate with a jake.
How about, I understand sometimes if there's an unsuccessful incubation of the eggs because of poor weather, sometimes there'll be a second mating period.
Oh, yes.
Do you know anything about that? I mean,
yeah, a lot of birds do that. If their nest fails for whatever reason, raccoons might eat a nest of turkey eggs, they can recycle and become receptive again and then lay a second clutch of eggs. But if it's later in the season and they're towards the end of the incubation period, they probably won't do it. But if they lose their nest within the first week or two, they can recycle and relay a second clutch.
I see. Okay, so we're going to have to take a break. Okay, that's the lowdown on the snood. And if you have a question for Mark McCullough, we welcome your calls at 1-800-966-1039. We have more to go right here on Maine Outdoors. You stay with us. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors. And again, Mark McCullough, who's a wildlife biologist for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, is with us. And if you have any questions, you want to probe any deeper into the behavior of turkeys, we welcome you to do so at what number, Bob?
1-800-966-1039, and the turkey season is coming right up, so...
Betcha.
If you want to find out what's going on out there, then just ask our man. He got the experienced hunter right in front of us here.
And we're going to talk to Mark again before the show is over, and he's going to talk a little bit about the wattle and also an interesting little sidebar that we were talking about during the break. On the snood. Okay, our other guests here, as I introduced them in the beginning of the show, Evan Thomas from Hamden and Seth Shawley from Hamden. Boys are at Hamden Academy, and they love to fish for those smallies. And we want you to tell us a little bit about what you guys are up to with this bass club.
Yeah, so we started a bass fishing team at Hamden Academy in the fall. And so basically we just... have a bunch of high school kids together that form the team, and we'll fish against other high schools in the state in bass fishing tournaments. And it's just a good time to, I don't know, compete in the realm of bass fishing.
So how many members do you have?
We have 14 right now.
We're local, that's local.
Yeah, well, 14 all from the high school. Yeah. We will probably have a few more coming from the high schools around ours next few months, but since high school bass fishing is a fairly new concept,
we
should see a lot more high school teams being formed in the next,
use your dad's boat.
Yeah, I use my dad's boat, and we fish all the time, and it's just something we enjoy.
You go it alone, or does your dad help you out?
For tournaments, you have to have an adult in the boat,
okay, good,
but when he's
that's
working,
great.
We do not hesitate to just go out and fish.
Yeah, that's good. So you guys are getting to be regulars on this business now, huh? You even have sponsors, I understand.
Yeah, to help the high school team get started, Old Town Canoe, Katahdin Trust Company, and Dice Arts, they all really helped us out.
Great.
And so, they helped get us jerseys and also help pay for tournament fees and stuff like that.
So what do you hope to do to you? Tell the people about tonight, for instance.
Well, just since, as I was saying, high school fishing is fairly new, we're just trying to get the word out so that hopefully we'll get some more kids that are interested in forming clubs in the area.
Yep.
So are you sanctioned by the high school? They approve of this? It's an official part of the school?
Yeah, so we went to the high school to make sure, because we use Hamden Academy as the title.
Right.
We asked permission, and because it's 100% self-funded, they had no problems with it, but it is mostly self, like we run it. We don't need much from the school. All you need is two members and an adult, and you can form your own team.
Well, who would they contact if they wanted to join up?
The best way to do it would to be to go to bassmaster.com or highschoolfishing.org. On their websites, they're fairly easy to get around, and you'll easily be able to find information on how to start your own club and who to contact.
Do you have, like, individual tests, you might say, who gets the most bass that day, something like that? Like Seth, he looks like he's quite a fisher. How long have you been fishing, Seth, the bass?
Very long time. My grandfather got me into it when I was young.
Great.
And just got the itch and haven't stopped.
Evan is quite a fly tyer right now. He's been tying flies since he was, what, 7 or 8 years old?
Yeah, I've been doing it for a while, but bass fishing is kind of, it's kind of replaced
like
fly fishing
than
a
salmon.
Little bit at the moment. So
you like that better than salmon fishing?
Oh, they're tough, but bass are a lot easier to catch, so
yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
Do you ever fly fish for bass for popping bugs, or do you use spinning rods or what?
Most of the time we'll use bait casting and spinning rods, but I have fly fish for bass, and it's just as fun.
Isn't that a blast for those popping bugs? Yeah. Okay, Seth, it's your turn to tell me. Where is your favorite bass spot?
I just like any good fisherman, I can't tell you that.
What?
Secrets.
No, you don't understand. On this show, you're required.
Secret spots.
What?
Secret spots.
You can't give us a hint?
Oh, no.
No? Do you guys fish the river?
Yeah, we do. We fish any place that has bass, we'll fish.
Any place that has bass.
Any
yeah.
place.
Yeah.
You fish the bass beds next month? When they're on the beds?
We will, but sometimes they're pretty hard to catch, so.
Sometimes off the beds. I don't know. Sometimes you just throw anything off a bed. You can find a bed really quite easy by searching around the shoreline there and toss a fly at them or a lure, and they'll pick it up and carry it off.
Oh, yeah.
And when they do that, you just chuck the line.
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. It's pretty good time of year to fish for them. No question about that.
You probably never heard of Lefty Cray, right?
Oh, I have, definitely.
Have you?
Yep.
He passed away, you know, last month.
He did, yeah.
And you know
his
favorite fish in Maine, which kind of shocked me, and it would you being a trout man, his favorite was the smallmouth bass.
I remember reading something about that, he'd take trips to fish the Penobscot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was his favorite. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that about Lefty, no.
Oh, yeah. He loved it. He said, the heck with the trout. I want to go catch those smallies.
A lot of people go down to Grand Lake Stream just for the bass.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot of action, you know.
Yeah, a lot more action, yeah.
Okay, we have a call, and let's take it right now. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors.
Hi. I had a question for the bass fishermen.
Go ahead.
Do they find that bass look for color patterns and size of the lures you're using to match the size of the bait or crawfish or whatever they usually eat? In fly fishing, you often have to kind of match the color, match the size, match the retrieve. Is it the same in bass fishing? And thanks for coming on tonight.
Yeah, it definitely is. Same thing when it comes to fly fishing. You want to match the hatch the best you can. So even though sometimes bass can be fairly easy to catch, there's a lot of times when they're definitely not easy to catch. So if they're feeding on, you know, an inch and a half, you know, small bass fry or something like that, you're going to want to get as close to that as you can. Because
how do you guys determine that per lake that you're fishing and stuff? And how's the Liberty bass fishing team doing?
So basically, it kind of depends on where we're going, but it will kind of get an idea by just looking. If it's mostly a rocky lake, then most of the time crawfish patterns are going to be what you want. And then if you've got a lot of weeds, then things like sunfish or perch or frogs and things like that is what you're going to want to match.
Oh, great. Do you find – I know you're a striped bass fisherman sometimes down there at South Deptford. So do you find striped bass can be fished with the same lures and stuff you use for your largemouth bass?
Yeah, they. I'll use like a tube to catch striped bass and sowed abscuck all the time. And lately, I don't know what's been happening to the smallmouth in there, but I haven't been able to catch them lately, or at least not in the same quantity that I could. Striped bass, they're still coming through, and you can definitely catch them on the same things that you'll catch smallmouth or even largemouth bass on.
Caller, your voice sounds familiar. Do I know you?
Yeah, I'm the old retired guy from the show. I just was saying hi to Evan. It's Kevin.
Oh, Kevin, I thought I recognized your voice. Good to hear from you. Good to hear from you, Kevin. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I'm just trying to tune in on the way home late at night, and glad to hear you guys are still at it.
Oh, good to talk. Glad you did.
All right, good to hear from you, Kevin.
Talk to you later.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
All right, let's take one more call. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Seth and Evan. Go ahead. Go ahead, caller. We lost the caller?
I don't know. They were there.
Okay. All righty. Well, that's a great program you guys have dreamed up, and this is your last chance, Seth, to fess up and tell me where you fish.
No? Do you go deep, Seth? Do you fish deep lures, too, along with surface lures?
I mean, I do. I just prefer top water, shallow water.
More fun that way.
A lot more fun.
Yeah.
Again, if somebody's interested, they can. You don't have a website yet, right?
No, we currently don't have a website. But if you go to bassmaster.com or highschoolfishing.org, you will be able to find plenty of information on how to start a high school fishing team.
All right. Okay, another caller. Good. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. Go ahead.
Hey, I was just curious if you guys have fished any tournaments, and if you're fishing tournaments this spring, or if you did them last fall, or how that works.
Yeah, so we fished, or Bass Nation had a state championship in the fall of October. Long story short, we got second place, short of first by just 1 ounce.
1 ounce.
But,
what was the prize?
Trophy? Well, the first two fishing team, or the first two place teams, got to go to Kentucky Lake in Tennessee the high school national championship competing against.
Wow, that's great. What a thrill.
So me and Seth will be going to Tennessee in August to fish against the other
country. All right, then.
That's great. Congratulations to you guys. That's
thank
great.
You. Congratulations.
All right, you still there, caller?
Yes.
Any other questions for these gents?
No, that's it. That's going to be a great trip for you boys. Yeah. Good luck to you in August.
Thank you.
And thanks for the call. We appreciate you listening to Maine Outdoors.
Yep, you're welcome.
Okay, we're going to take a commercial break here. I want to thank you, gents, for being on the show tonight, and we invite you to hang around. You don't have to rush. And good luck with your club, and good luck with your fishing. And, Seth, if you change your mind, you want to tell me where to fish, just give me a call.
I will.
All right. Just want to remind everybody that this program is sponsored in part every week by General Appliance and Brewer. And it's Bob Lehman's favorite place to buy his ranges and his compost toilets, right?
Oh, you know it is, absolutely.
And we've been talking about these great folks many years, and they help make this show possible. And if you'd like to give Al a call, if you're looking for a new or used propane or electric appliance, he has a complete line over there. His prices are fair, and you can reach him at 989-3714. And they're over there on what street, Bob?
It's Center Street, and they got almost the whole block on Center Street and Brewer. Come across the new bridge, take a right and a left, and you're right in front of the place. Can't miss it, right on your right.
Okay.
And they sell compost toilets, too. That's big over there.
You betcha. Okay.
The wave, baby. Come on, Bob. You're going to be in there, kid.
I can step in for Jim, but I really didn't want to take his thunder. You know?
Oh, okay.
No, I know.
Anyway, General Appliance in Brewer is the place to go for all of your appliance needs. Next time you're in the market for an appliance, give him a jingle or stop in and see Al. He's a great guy to do business with. We all patronize him, don't we?
They sell our books over there, Paul.
They sell our books over there.
Yeah.
And they're great folks to do business with. Al Elkin, General Appliance and Brewer. Remember, they help make this show possible every week. We appreciate it if you'd patronize them as we do. Okay, we want to get back to Mark McCullough and talk about turkey, the sex life of turkeys a little more. We were talking about the snood before the 7:30 break. And one of the things I found interesting that I'd like Mark to comment on was that, you know, Mother Nature is a wonderful, it's wonderful, the incredible complexities of all of these creatures. And there's a purpose for that snood besides attracting female turkeys. Can you tell us about the parasite factor there?
Yeah, so it turns out that the hen turkeys are not looking at the fan tail or the spurs, but they're looking at the snood, because it turns out that's a really good indicator of the health of the tom turkey. So the longer the snood, the healthier the tom. And specifically how that works is if a tom turkey has been exposed to parasites, coccidia parasite, which is a protozoan that gets in your gut, makes you sick. But as a young turkey, if that happens, that tom will never grow a very long snood. And the females know this.
That's incredible.
And so they're looking for good genes. They're looking for a strong, studly tom with a long snood.
Yeah.
Not only turkeys, and it's other animals.
Look
for that type of thing, isn't that
well,
correct?
Yeah. So,
like and deer and so forth.
Yeah, so
that's another question. That leads to the question, are there other birds that have snoods or just turkeys?
No, I think as far as I know, that's the only one I'm aware of. Other members of the gallinaceous birds, the chickens and turkeys and pheasants, some of them have wattles and caruncles and things around their face and head too. But this is what the hen's looking at as a way to measure the health of the tom.
Yeah. It's kind of like with a deer, a white-tailed deer, the female is looking for a deer with big antlers, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's certainly how some of these things evolved, as a way to impress the female, but also show that I'm in good health here, too.
And I carry good genes.
Carry good genes.
Oh, fascinating. Okay, Jim Layton was listening. Jim's not with us behind the engineer booth tonight. He's at home listening, enjoying the show. Wanted to know if you could explain a little bit about the wattle. What's the wattle? I have one of those hanging right here. But turkeys have them as well. What's the purpose? My wattle has no purpose, but what does a wattle of a turkey serve?
Well, you have to ask yourself, why does a turkey have no feathers on its head? And of all the birds, they're the only one that doesn't have feathers on
its
head, except for a turkey vulture. But, but the wild turkey doesn't have feathers on its head, especially the tom, because they're so large that they have to dissipate heat. If they get too active during the mating season or fighting with each other at other times of the year, they can build up so much heat in their body that they can actually expire from that. So turkeys over time evolve so that they don't have feathers on their head, so that they can dissipate that heat.
I'll be darned.
So along with that, they've got all these wattles and caruncles and a dewlap under their chin, and during the mating season in the spring, those become a way to display the snood. Also, is a way to display to the female. So you've probably experienced this when you're turkey hunting, and they get into full strut. That naked head that they have turns red, white, and blue.
Yeah.
Brilliant colors.
Oh, yeah. Incredible.
Yeah, just incredible.
Yeah.
And then when they're done, the color goes out of them. And so it's a organ
like a salmon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's displaying as part of the display to the female.
Yes.
So does the wattle serve any other physiological purpose? I mean, is it a...
Not that I've know of or have read, but it's there as part of that coloration that they get when they're in the full strut.
Yeah. Wow. Do you gents have any turkey questions? You're turkey hunters. You sure?
Yeah, Jeff? we had a caller that called in, and he was wondering, what's the impact on grouse and woodcock nesting by the turkey?
Okay. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm not a turkey biologist, and somebody like Brad Allen could probably answer this a lot better than I. But to my knowledge, I don't think there's a lot of competition between turkeys and grouse. I grew up in Pennsylvania, where both species are common, and one's larger than the other, and they sort of divide up the resources in the forest, and I don't think they compete a lot with each other. I think you can have good grouse populations and good turkey populations in the same area.
Yeah, there seems to be a common belief that turkeys have hurt grouse numbers, but Brad Allen's written about that issue, Mark, many times, and he argues that they don't really compete. And he's had some pretty compelling arguments, and they've appeared in the Northwood Journal.
A lot of people have called in, and they think that turkeys have bothered the deer population quite a bit.
Yeah, and of course, they do overlap in their food a bit, especially in the fall when turkeys and deer are both feeding on mast, like acorns and beech nuts and things like that.
Sure.
But you know, last year we had such a tremendous crop of acorns. There were plenty for everyone, and there's still some left over. I've got squirrels in the yard as soon as the snow is melting are still eating acorns from last fall.
Yep. Wow. Okay, any other questions on turkey behavior?
Well, the season opens when, Paul? Last day of this month, isn't it?
April 30th.
Yep. Y'all going out, right?
Yes, sir. I plan to.
And how about Di? Is she going to?
I was asking her. I asked her that today as we were riding up, and she says, well, I really enjoyed it a lot when we had our own land in Hamden. She says, I don't know.
She got a turkey a few years ago.
Yeah, she's got a couple.
I ate part of it.
Yeah, she's got a couple.
She had it for Thanksgiving. She saved it. Yeah, it's a beauty, too.
But she said, well, maybe. She wasn't sure. She'd get all of her chores done. She might join me.
Yeah, we'll see. Got some more calls coming in, it looks like.
We do. Okay.
Yeah.
They're probably calling in. They want to ask Seth about his fishing spots.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure he does. Gosh, yeah. But he's keeping that pretty mum over there.
All right.
Yeah.
If we have callers or questions, we'll address them. Let's switch gears a little bit, Mark, if we could, in the time left. Again, for those who may not know you, you're with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. How long have you been with them?
Almost 16 years.
Have you? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. We have another call, do we? Good evening, caller. You're
Kevin.
In Maine Outdoors.
Yeah, I got a turkey question / a tip for your guest, Paul.
Well, go ahead, Kevin.
I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard that if you put out a decoy and your decoy doesn't have the biggest snood, you can make up for it by being a sweet talker or a really good caller. I think that works all around in life. So just thought I'd throw that in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to address that one, but that was a good observation.
Right.
He may be right. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, we're going to switch gears a little bit, and unless the callers would rather we not, but we'd like to have – anyway, Mark's been with the Fish and Wildlife Service a number of years, and he gets involved in a lot of different activities with wildlife critters. And I wanted to maybe take the time a little bit to have you tell us a little bit about what's going on now as far as the federal listings of the cougar and the lynx. Could you address those for us, Mark? Tell us what's happening.
Yeah, sure, Paul. There's been activity on both of those fronts this winter. The eastern cougar is a species it was actually one of the first species put on the federal endangered species list way back in the early 1970s. And there's been a lot of debate. I think I've been on this show and we've talked about cougars in the past.
Right.
It's a, you know, it's a topic that everyone's has a lot of interest in. But at any rate, the Fish and Wildlife Service carefully looked at the status of the eastern cougar in the eastern United States and eastern Canada. And we reached the conclusion that the cougar is extinct, the original cougar that was here. And that there's no longer any breeding populations. We do acknowledge that there are cougars from time to time. Sometimes they're released or escape pets, and other times we've had animals walk out here from the western United States. So they can be here, but there's none that are breeding. So based on that information, we decided to take the eastern cougar off the endangered species list. But the Florida panther, down where you were just at, is still an endangered species and still on the federal list.
Okay.
And then the Canada lynx, we did a similar review of the status of the Canada lynx the last year or two. And this past fall, the Fish and Wildlife Service determined that we've achieved recovery for the Canada lynx, that their numbers seem to be stable enough that we could recommend taking them off the threatened list. So that would mean that they wouldn't have any listing status at all. And so we're developing or starting to develop the proposed rules to be able to do that. So it's going to take some time to write those rules and work that through the process, just like we did for the cougar.
Evan's dad, Scott Thomas, has a photo of a cougar in his backyard.
Yeah, we actually got a video, or I videotaped it. Dad was at work one day, and I just saw movement in the corner of the field, and I grabbed the video camera because I figured it was a coyote or something, and I'm 100% sure that it was a cougar. I mean, it was long, and it
had a long tail.
Yeah, had the long tail with the black tip, and it, I mean, it definitely wasn't a cat, put it that way.
I've seen the video. It's actually pretty convincing.
I was out to your house. Yeah. And with your dad and saw that, and it looks real.
It sure does.
So who knows? I mean,
yeah. Well, I've learned never to say never.
Yeah.
We had a cougar that came all the way from South Dakota, and it was killed on a highway down near New York City in Connecticut.
Yeah.
But at any rate, yeah, it could be. I'd love to see the video.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to show you sometime.
Hey, wow.
Do you have do you dispute the existence of cougars in Maine?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if from time to time an animal showed up. But I'm convinced, having looked pretty carefully at it, that there's no residual animals that have somehow survived in some remote area like northern Maine or northern New Brunswick. Yeah.
You know, for years, Mark, there was a coy dog showing up here in Maine, and people thought they were wolves. And all this stuff, and of course, it turned out what they were was coyotes, large, a bigger breed than out west, and that's what they turned out to be, of course.
Uh-huh.
But for years, nobody said, "Oh no, they couldn't be here," but they were here.
Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So
I've heard so many stories from so many credible people that it's hard to believe that they're not seeing a large cat with a long tail. I mean, it's just, and yet you'd think one would show up. Hit by a car or something. Yeah. That's what I get quite figured.
Yeah, because in Florida, where you're at, there's just 150, 200 cougars, but they get 15 or 20 killed on the highways every year
do they?
Down there. Yeah,
oh, right. Yeah,
yeah, so there's no doubt that they're there when you have that many being killed on the road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting a little bit low on time, I think, here, aren't we, engineer?
Yes, we're
1 minute.
Probably 1 minute. Less than that.
Okay. Want to thank all three of you gents for being here. Made a very interesting program, and we appreciate it.
Very good.
And, Mark, thank you very much for telling us about the snood. And now I know when I see that turkey, I'll know what's going on there a little better. That's great. Gentlemen, good luck with your bass fishing. And it's been a pleasure to have you here, and we think it's great that you're taking it seriously and getting involved in that club. That's a great activity. Our guest next week is going to be Mike Hegarty. Do you know who he is, Robert?
He's the president of something.
Penobscot Fly Fishers.
Penobscot Fly Fishers.
Penobscot Fly Fishers. But you know that, Norm.
I do.
You're
a
member.
I know him.
Norm is a member. You know Mike. He's going to be here.
Mike. Great guy.
And they've got a lot of activities coming down. They've been very busy this winter, and they'll be with us next week to tell us more. And we'll see you all next week right here on
Maine Outdoors.